We don't need any airs and graces. We don't need a long podcast introduction. Cricket is back. And so is the Pinch Hitter podcast. Cricket is returning. That is the point of this podcast. There is nothing else to say. Cricket is coming back tomorrow with an intra-squad England friendly at the biosecure venue of the, and I've mispronounced this last time and I still can't pronounce it properly now. So Terence, where's it taking place?
It's taking place in the biosecure bubble at the Aegeus Bowl.
Aegeus Bowl, that was it. I want to say Aegeus, it's Aegeus. Get your pronunciation.
Aegeus, it's Aegeus, presumably like the Aegean Sea.
Just like the Aegean Sea, yes.
Presumably it's being created a biosecure bubble in the Aegeus Bowl, because anyone who's ever tried to get there for an international cricket match will know it is poorly connected,
poorly
served by roads and public transport. And that's why they've chosen, and there's a hotel there because literally you do have to stay overnight to get to a game.
I think it was one of those original park and ride stadiums as well.
Like the Amex Stadium.
Like the Amex, like the Majeski. Some of which I'd love to dedicate, we often say there's a pod in that. A pod in Park and Ride Stadium.
Park and Ride only stations.
that's where
well, great use of stadium.
Exactly. Well, always good to slip that one in.
One of the big things in lockdown has been people running marathons to all the stadia. Maybe we could try and go to all of the county cricket grounds only using Park and Ride.
Only using Park and Ride. Yeah. Whilst driving on countries which drive on the left. Love it. Yes, all doable. And it's going to be nice to have some cricket to watch. They're going to be streaming it live on the ECB website.
We are talking static cameras. At best, one camera at each end. Ideally, we just have one camera and we'd have to watch from behind the batter.
Yes.
Ideally.
Yeah. Ideally, both overs from behind the batsman.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got England's top 27, we'll come back to that, cricketers playing on grainy YouTube only, live streaming on the ECB website footage, and I for one cannot wait. How have you been keeping up with cricket? What have you been watching? What have you climbed into?
What I've climbed into? Minimal Scandinavia tournaments. Albeit been great to see them happening and they've provided content for the pinch hitter. So been enjoying that. I know we have slightly different opinions on it, but I still love these full match replays. Albeit I'm not as bothered by 2017 Headingley test as great a batsman as Shai Hope is. The fact that he's never scored a Test match century before or since probably means
it's a lovely stat though, isn't it?
It's incredible, and no one has ever scored a century in both innings in a first class game at Headingley either. So not even just in Test matches, mental. So
we are really scraping the barrel with the replays now, aren't we?
We are, but I think if they really looked into it, you could do some more. Like, surely they can do some down under Ashes games. Surely they there's so much footage out there, and that's why I'm still loving retro footage, based on Project Restart of the Premier League, which I think has just been awful to watch. Maybe it's because there was nothing much really to play for at the top end. But I really enjoyed like the Euro 96 replays. I know this is a cricket podcast. But I really enjoyed the full-on Euro 96 full match replays. And saying that, I think you look a bit like Steve McManaman with your hair now.
I have had that. Yeah, two shaggies in that famous Euro 96 scene, wasn't
Darren
it?
Darren Anderson and McManaman. Yeah, on both wings. Shaggy. Yeah.
Yeah, shaggy on the wings. I really enjoyed watching the Euro 96 replays. Especially enjoying the fact that it's still on the kind of square screen.
Yeah.
They've made no attempt to remaster it or make it work for a widescreen TV. I watched the penalty shootout against Spain the other day.
Yeah. Did you just fast forward?
Stuart Pearce's redemption.
Yeah.
Which was great. I started off being all in on the cricket replays when it was the Ashes from last year, when it was the World Cup final, and then we started getting into Ashes 05. Yeah, great. I watched that all day. And then it was Cook's final 100 was being replayed.
That was the first bit where there was a few kind of raised eyebrows, wasn't it? It was like,
when we sort of went, really?
The whole Test match?
Yeah, the whole match.
Yeah, the fact that Cook's century wasn't even like, it wasn't like on the final day either.
Yeah.
So there was still more.
It was just after lunch in the middle of the Test. So there was a good 2.5 days after the century.
Yeah.
Of just waiting for Jimmy to take this.
Yeah.
Was it his 500th wicket, or was it when he went past? It would have been 500, wouldn't it?
It was the wicket which made him the all-time fast bowler.
Yes, you're right. Wickets. And I was thinking it couldn't be that because it was 2 years ago. But actually, he's barely played in that 2 years, has he?
No. Yeah.
So he's probably only got 20-odd since then. Was it 560 or 563 or something?
Yeah, get past pitch.
Yeah, and he's not on 600 yet, is he?
Not quite.
That was when I started going, oh, really? And then, like you say, now we're on to full match replays on TMS of wildly mediocre West Indies from 2017 series. There's the worst, we've spoken about the worst day of cricket you and I have been to watch was when we watched Yunus Khan bat out a 100 on an absolute road at the Oval 4 years ago. That was being replayed on the telly the other day. I was like, who's watching this? There's so much hilarious. Put Rob Linder's mirror image cricket of everyone batting left-handed.
Put a whole 5 days of that.
Batting right-handed.
Five days
of that.
A five-day test match of that. So that was a moment in lockdown, wasn't it, where it looked like he was going to get culled from YouTube and Twitter. It was very much a sleepless night I had.
I was going to say that was when you woke up in cold sweats, wondering how on earth we were going to get pinch hit content, and everyone else was just terrified that we weren't going to see the 90s in full colour again. What a library that guy's got.
Oh, incredible.
Unbelievable.
But also the great fact that It was like waking up after on Boxing Day 2010, where I'd gone to sleep where Australia were 30 odd for one or for none, and then you wake up in the morning and they're all out and England have got 120 for none. The whole Robolinda 2 was sorted, and it was when I woke up that morning, life was fine again.
Life was back. And you don't get a lot of this on the Pitchers Pod, but good on Cricket Australia for recognising that, even though it probably does breach some copyright laws, what a really valuable resource it is to have all that content in one place.
Very good. Yeah, I've always said very strong cricket board.
Always said that.
I've gone on that on record many times saying that.
Can we get him on?
Rob.
Yeah.
Or I thought you said Cricket Australia. Get the board.
Not all of them. Get James Sutherland. He's not doing very much.
Get the board on. So that's been the content. That's what's kept us going. And then I guess now we're moving into the time where there's actually going to be some cricket to watch. And I'm also looking forward to the potential of Cap 697. Being handed out in test cricket, and that's going to throw so many people off kilter when the trivia is going to be coming out in 20-30 years time. So you're going to be saying, well, hang on, so the first England player to get a cap in 2020 was Alan Jones,
at the age of 81
who played his test I think in the 70s.
In the 70s, I don't know. What I don't get is that it was a capped international.
Yep.
For a couple of years, and then it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then it was never a capped game.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't for a couple of years. So why didn't he get his cap?
Did they remove it? Say, sorry, mate.
They give it to him and then take it away. So he's also, does that mean, as well as him being 697, There's also...
No, he's not. He's definitely not. No, yeah, you're right. So he's not. He's not, because that would have... They would have been able to have done that tweak, wouldn't they? So no. But the great thing about it, not only for Alan Jones, is it moves us closer to 700.
It moves us closer to 700, and...
Yes.
It moves us... You know where I'm going.
Yes.
It moves
713.
Jimmy playing with 713.
Exactly, which will be an incredible day. And if we just go wild for a bit, then that's so doable.
Yeah. What we are now six. So actual number 696. That was Zach Crawley. So what's 13 players probably only takes us back to the Ashes when. You had Overton, Crane,
Tom Curran,
all making their debuts. If you think who's made their debut since then, you've got Pope and the other Curran.
Yeah.
The Leach and Bess, Sibley and Burns. Like, there's a lot of...
Yeah.
You don't have to go back far.
No, you don't. The slightly annoying thing is that the England team has a far more settled... vibe to it now,
but it never
stays.
that means nothing.
It never stays. We can't have another year like I think it was 2011 where we had no debutants. And that just wouldn't wash. So that's important for me.
What would really speed that up? What tends to accelerate a few caps in a row? Is a good old Ashes series.
Good old Ashes series, because
if we cop one of those up in the next year or so,
yeah,
that would really speed up the process.
An Ashes away series always means two or three players will retire midway through, and a few people get chucked to debut at the end of it. So yeah, that's a good way of doing it. The other way is go to India for 5 tests, which we're planning to do as well at some point, because then we always pick spinners and people who. Probably shouldn't really be playing cricket, let alone playing for England. And then they get a few caps as well. So we've gone down that Warren Head, and that's fine. But let's run back to intra squad friendly, kicking off tomorrow. We're excited about the prospect of cameras just at the batsman's arse.
We're excited about the just general kind of 90s football vibe of an intra-squad friendly.
Yeah.
You've got England versus Aylesbury in 1990. You've got the B team fixtures from before the World Cup in 2006. Just deliciously amateur feel about it. I can't wait.
It's just going to be great. And there's one thing which, when they announced the teams earlier today, early this evening, which has caught my eye, and I wonder if this is something which I've just missed for about the last 2 years, but correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to read to you the team Stokes, and when I say something which makes your eyebrows raise a little bit, just stop me. So team Stokes, you've got Dominic Sibley, Keaton Jennings, Zach Crawley, Jonathan Bairstow, Ben Stokes.
Sorry, you've got who?
Jonathan Bairstow, you know Jonathan? Jonathan Bairstow. When did that happen? Yeah, we all remember Andrew Cole, but when did he become Jonathan Bairstow?
Are you sure it's Jonathan Bairstow and he's not decided that he is just Jonathan? He's just going...
just go with Jonathan.
Just wants to be known by his first name.
They've got Bairstow as well, so it is Jonathan. It's Jonathan Bairstow. So just for the record, that is a new thing, isn't it?
That is a new thing. And also, it would be so Johnny Bairstow if he's decided that he is now Jonathan.
Oh yeah,
He wants to keep hold of the earth, because it's an extra part to his game, and it improves his batting, and it's all about the whole package.
Yeah, and it's something else to slightly annoy him. Which would be ideal. So we've got that, and then if you go deeper into that team of Team Stokes, we've got the great survivor. Lazarus himself, Jack Leach. Now, how is Jack Leach still alive? Is my question.
Jack Leach, you think how bad 2020 has been for everybody else? Jack Leach started 2020 with sepsis.
and beat it.
And beat it. yeah, coronavirus, probably, and beat it. He's probably on about COVID 30 right now.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Didn't he pull a hamstring on the flight home or something that meant he wasn't going to be able to fly up to Sri Lanka or something?
Yeah.
He was definitely injured apart from just being sick.
Yeah.
So all of the kind of government stipulations around who had to shelter or shield,
yeah,
applied to him.
And he's here. And he's here. And he's still.
And here he is.
He's a great survivor.
But a biosecure bubble is very much his natural environment.
Oh, it's.
I'm actually just taking it to it like duck to water.
He's got everything that Jack Leach would be looking for. So yeah, so he's in that team as well. He's part of Team Stokes, and I like to think that Ben Stokes chose him with his first pick. He just thought, right, how can I channel Headingley? How can I just get everyone to realise who is in charge here? It's me. And so he went with Jack Leach. So
is he also picked Nathan Lyon?
He's not picked Gary. He's not picked Gazza. But sadly, Gazza didn't make it not either into the 30-man training squad or into the initial 55 either. But I'd love to get your thoughts on this one as well with the 30-man squad now cut down to, well, we've got 27 players for this intra-squad game. Obviously, Joe Root is off to see the birth of his second child. But what has Verdi and Jamie Overton done wrong? Are they to talk in Steve Finn parlance? Are they unselectable?
Apparently, imagine being so. Joe Root, this 30-man squad. Joe Root's obviously not playing because he's gone back for the birth of his second child. It's 13 against 14. Imagine not getting selected. When there's literally a space on one of the teams, and you're still not getting, you're literally, it's literally that what they're saying is having you in this side would be detrimental to performance, because we'd rather just have a gap.
Yeah.
Even in an inter-squad friendly, we'd rather just have a gap.
Yeah.
Unless they just felt we can't just not pick one guy.
Yes.
We can't just not pick one of them.
Yeah.
And so they've not picked Jamie Overton. I think he called him Jamie Verdi.
They've not picked Amar Overton, which is a real shame. But no, you're right. It's like maybe that was why we can't just have not one person playing, because that would just be way too harsh. But yeah, it very much smacks of a Mourinho thing to do, isn't it? Of saying, well, I'm only going to pick four subs because they didn't give me any more money to spend in the transfer window. So I'm just, I could pick a youth team player, but I'm not even going to do that. I'm going to spite my face.
I'm not even going to pick one of KP's Muppets. It does smack of that. The one thing that does go against that is the fact that I think of two high-level sporting coaches, you'd struggle to find two people more diametrically opposed in their views on mateship, team selection, coaching strategies, relationships with the media, relationships with players, than Chris Silverwood and Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, different people.
If this is the one thing they've got in common, I'd be stunned.
I'd love to. Yeah, I've never pictured them both together actually. Maybe there's a pod in that one as well.
A pod in. Do we think Chris Silverwood and Jose Mourinho hang out?
Or just a pod in people who Silverwood shouldn't hang out with. That if we were his parents, we would consider would be bad influences on him.
Yeah, Jose Mourinho would be up there. Ben Stokes would probably be up there.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that. We don't talk about those things.
Ben Stokes
would be up there. Yeah, he's clean. He's going to be next England captain of it as well. Now, There's a name in Team Butler who is going to bring me on to another bit we want to discuss, which is the move from Yorkshire to Warwickshire of everyone's favourite Narn, Tim Bresnahan. And the link I was going to have in Team Butler is Chris Wokes, who's got a hairband now,
Yeah, and he looks fantastic.
Looks fantastic. He's kind of got rid of his beard a bit. He looks, he's, or maybe his headband is just now becoming more, taking all the limelight, which is a very un-Chris Wokes thing to do. But Chris Wokes and Tim Bresnan, to me, are very much, if you're talking about Silverwood and Mourinho not being peas in a pod, how much of a pod is Wokes and Bresnan in together?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of works.
Just
about. Just two, like, as cricketers, just two absolutely rock solid blokes. As blokes, I'm sure that you couldn't find two sort of more different kind of characters. Bresnan's the kind of slightly daft Yorkshire lad, loves a drink,
barrel-chested,
likes a night out, barrel-chested, big sort of bruiser. And Chris Wokes is exactly who you want to take home to your mum. But yeah, both just absolutely rock solid. I don't really understand why Yorkshire, presumably Yorkshire, didn't want Bresnan, because he'll just keep on playing for ages, as evidenced by the fact that he signed essentially 3-year deal in the truncated season this year with Warwickshire, so he'll play until he's 37, 38. I can't have seen him wanting to leave Yorkshire anytime particularly soon.
No.
But what a character to have in the dressing room,
and on the pitch,
and on the pitch, and just a great club man. He's been playing solely for Yorkshire for the last 7 or 8 years.
Yep.
He finished playing for England way too early, which fortunately isn't something that's going to happen to Wokes. He finished playing for England way too early, so Yorkshire have had some of his best years. What a coup for Warwickshire.
Yeah, great signing.
What a signing.
Great signing indeed. And so he's going to be playing with Ian Bell at Warwickshire. Yeah. I think they played together. Did I see this early? They played together at the Perth Scorchers. In the BBL, maybe even won the BBL together, which you definitely have to check that one. But I've got half a thought they did that. But yeah, he's surprisingly only 35. Tim Bresnan.
Yeah.
He doesn't really look any different now than he did when he played for England.
If anything, he looks a bit sharper.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit of salt and pepper in his hair.
But isn't he just? He's just one of those players, as you say, he could easily play till he's 40. He's never been the
quickest. Such a beautifully economic action, isn't he, for a big
player? Beautiful economic action. The biomechanics must love it as well. There's just no... You're not putting undue pressure. You're not slamming down an ankle. Your knee's not taking all your follow-through. And he can bat and bowl.
Massively underrated. He was an absolute key part of that 10-11 side, wasn't he? Because he balanced the side so well. Tremlett or Finn, who were the other kind of third seam options. Although I personally could never quite work out why we needed so many who's going to be the third seamer.
Yeah.
Because it clearly should have been Bresnan. Much as I love the other two. He was an absolutely key part in that side. Run through brick walls. I know it's a cliche, but you run through brick walls, bowl all day. He took really important wickets.
Yeah.
He was quality when we bowled Australia out for nothing in the Boxing Day test.
Yeah, for minus nothing. Yeah, at the MCG.
Yeah. He was quality in that. He could bat. He was a fantastic ODI player. You could see him slotting straight into this current ODI side, can you?
Played 85 ODIs.
Yeah, anti-20s. And he finished playing for England when he was 28 for no logical reason. I guess he was a casualty of that kind of 2014-15 just kind of total revolution off the back of disastrous
time to go. Yeah,
disastrous Ashes, disastrous World Cup.
I'll tell you what. So that was his final Test appearance was at the MCG in 2013, yeah. But his final ODI appearance is an ODI which is which, considering it didn't finish, is possibly one of the most famous ODIs in English history that never finished. Now, I don't know how many other ones never finished, but if I was to pose that question to you, Terence, now you've got to back me up on this now, I'm running with it and I'm continuing to run with it. So I'm talking about an ODI which there were only 18 overs bowled in, and England had a captain who certainly never captained England in any other game of any length again. And I think the majority of the time of the game, the majority of the content was about the coach, it being his last game.
So, I think we... So last time we... So, about that time, I'm going to work backwards and think of this logically.
Yeah.
About that time, the only time we changed coach was between Bayliss and the second Peter Moores era. Second coming of Peter Moores. Which would have been at the start of 2015. Now, if I'm right, we started off that summer with an ODI against Ireland in Ireland.
Absolutely.
And it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and the whole game was rained off. And then Peter Moores got sacked immediately after.
Yes. And who was England's captain?
James Taylor.
Brilliant. Yes, Terence. All over that. So that was Presnan's final England appearance.
What's the way to get? Why did he get picked? I know we picked a pretty. If I remember rightly, Bradley Papara get 100.
Well, no. So the only thing that happened was Ireland batted for 18 overs.
And that was it.
56 for four, and Bresnan bowled 6 overs for 11, 1 for 11. Yeah, he probably thought at the end of that spell, I'm nailed on for the 2019 World Cup squad. That
so he bowled a third of the overs in his last game.
Yep.
Never got picked
again. Steve Finn bowled 3 overs, which went for 1 run.
James Taylor was the captain and is now obviously retired.
Yep.
Finn and Bresnan haven't been seen since.
Zafar Ansari is now a lawyer.
Allegedly.
Who else have we got in there? Oh, Mark Wood played, David Willey played, James Vince, Jason Roy, Adil Rashid. Okay, so it's quite a surprising number of.
Okay, half decent.
John E. Bairstow was wicketkeeper. So don't know who he is.
John E. Bairstow,
great middle name. That is where it all finished for Brezzy, and what incredible figures to bow out on.
Yeah, what a player, massively underrated, which is a trait that we love.
Absolutely,
above almost anything else. Massively underrated, good on a night out, proper down to earth bloke. Great action, bowled all day, bats a bit, loves it, what a guy.
And then his final while we're on the subject, his final T20 game for England was in 2014 against the Netherlands in Chattagram, which the Netherlands won by 45 runs.
at the World
T20. Now that was there's a few interesting names in that.
There was a shit show.
There's an interesting name, England's number 11, England were all out for 88, and Stephen Parry was your last man.
Stephen Parry the other day actually.
I was exploring
Stephen Parry and his career,
and
the other day when I was thinking about horses for courses selections.
Excellent.
And he was a brilliant example of this, because not only was he a horse for course pitch wise selection, he was a massive horse for course of format.
Right.
Like couldn't get a game in any other format. Couldn't even get a one day game for Lancashire. It was purely like the next generation of Michael Yardy left arm darts. was all he could bowl, and then as soon as that got worked out, he played about six games for England and never got seen again. But for those six games, he was kind of England's secret weapon until that became clear that was Steve. What
happened to him?
What happened to him post his England career?
Yeah, I was like, why did England decide they didn't want him anymore?
Well, I think it was. I think it got chalked down as a classic case of Peter Moore's overthinking things, and looking at the data and deciding that the data said we absolutely had to have a left arm spinner, who got it nice and flat, and got it in through the air quickly. Except that it turns out that data was nonsense, and that having a left arm spinner who bowled it through the air quickly and bowled these sort of darts was only good if actually they were a good bowler, not someone who was struggling to get into the Lancashire team. And he spent all of last summer playing for Lancashire second level.
But played in Breslin's final T20 game as well.
So it's
interesting that Breslin has these kind of, he's just very forgettable ways of finishing. Now I was asking you to expand on Stephen Parry there because I was trying to get loaded up Dwayne Bravo's latest single, which I don't know if you've seen, but he's bringing out a song for MS Dhoni's birthday.
This is latest. More recent than the one we spoke about at Christmas.
Yeah. So this is I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to find it, which is a shame. This is in tribute to MS Dhoni, whose birthday I believe is July 7th. And DJ Bravo, who we know has form, has pulled this one out as well. So but lo and behold, I couldn't find it. Is the long and short of it. So that was why I was able to.
We'll make sure it's in the pinch hitter tomorrow, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, if not, we'll make sure we start. We'll get it all loaded up in time for the next pod that we line up. So
we are still looking for an intro.
We are. That could be the best way of doing it. So we're thinking about a few. We're going to do a post intra squad pod, aren't we?
We can do a post intra. We'll do a post intra squad look ahead at. Series, bit of a review, bit of a look ahead, and then we'll try and do a couple over the course of the actual game, shouldn't we?
Yes, absolutely. Keep people abreast of what's happening and see what the BioSecure series looks like.
Let's do it.
Nice one, mate. Right, well, it's good to be back in podding, and cricket begins again tomorrow. So it's Christmas Eve, isn't it? Try and sleep.
It's Christmas Eve.
Try and sleep, mate. I know it's going to be tough. And, well, I've no doubt we'll be exchanging messages tomorrow.
Of course, can't wait.
Nice one, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate.